Yeah, I laugh. But then I shake my head. No. Because hours to us are like years for others. And we've spent a lifetime together since we met last night. She exhales again. Finn, she whispers. No, I say. No. I'm not gonna let you run. I'm not gonna let you. People love you, Izzy. You know things, and you share those things with them. Those women need you. And an online course is a good start for a lot of them, but they need more than that. They need to see you, feel you, hear you, know you. And I need all that too. She squirms in my strong embrace. I don't want to give in and let her go. Not even to just change position. But I do. Because she's asking. And right now I want to give her everything she asks for. When she's done squirming, we're face to face. Her eyes on me, my eyes on her. Mirrored smiles in the fading, hazy light of sunset filtering in through the floor-to-ceiling windows. You don't know me, she says. Wrong, I say. I know you. She shakes her head. No. I think if you really knew me, you'd be ashamed of me. Izzy. Finn, she says, placing her fingertips on my lips. Just listen. I have a story to tell you. One that starts and ends just like the one I told on stage today. But it's all the parts in the middle that I left out that matter. So tell me, I say. Tell me everything so I know what I'm up against. Up against? She asks. Yeah. Tell me who I gotta kill to make it right. I regret that immediately, because she knows now. She knows a little bit about what I'm capable of, and I don't want to scare her. She huffs out a breath. I wish it were that simple. It is that simple. But I have enough sense to keep it to myself this time. Because Izzy has no idea who I really am either. It's me who carries the shame and guilt in this room, not her. There's no way she can be as dirty as I am. She is pure in my eyes. Pure and innocent. Sweet and strong. Perfect. No. It's me who has the shameful story to tell. And if she thinks that what I told her last night is all there is, well, I'm gonna disappoint her. But not yet. There's time for that later. Now I just want to know her. Tell me, I say. I'll make it all go away. And if you still want to leave this life behind when that's all done, we'll leave together. She stares at me. We are eye to eye, soul to soul. Her forehead is sweaty from the sex, and her hair is damp. I brush a piece off her cheek so I can see her unspoiled. It all started when I was 11 and he was 28. I have to repeat those words in my head several times to make sense of them. To force myself to accept what is surely coming next. Death. Because I'm going to kill that motherfucker. And I'm going to make it hurt.
Chapter 26. Izzy. I regret the words the moment they leave my mouth. I want to take them back, eat them up, swallow them down, and keep that shit buried deep, deep inside me. But I can't. There is no such thing as rewind in real life.
Caleb,
he asks. I just enjoy things as I nod. The view, The sunset over the mountains off in the west. The room. His body. What we just did. How I feel about him.
He... how?
I hear the anger inside him building. I hear the fear, too. And there's a part of me that wants to say, just kidding, nothing happened. But there's no rewind. And fuck it, right? So I say, my mom had me when she was 15. And then I glance up at him, kind of afraid to see the pain on his face, but used to it. I've told the story before, probably a dozen times to various people over the years. So it's not like this is something new.
Okay,
he says. I can hear his heartbeat and his voice. You know how a person's voice shakes a little when they're angry or afraid or frustrated to the point of tears? He's definitely the first one. Angry. I take a deep breath and begin on the exhale. She was 15, kinda wild, kinda remarkable. The kind of teenage girl who gets attention, not because she's bad or beautiful or smart, but because she was just born special. You ever know someone like that? He's just staring at me when I glance up again.
Yeah,
he says.
You are that special someone, Izzy. You're strong and sensible and courageous. I can't take my eyes off you. Even if I wanted to, I can't. You're the only thing there is to look at. Everything else just fades into the background.
I press my lips together, afraid that he's lying, and not even that I'm special. Just afraid of falling into him, losing him, because this whole situation isn't going to end with the happily ever after. It's just not. So I take a deep breath and continue. I found a photo album of her once. My grandpa had it in the attic. I lived with him in Montreal until I was 8. By then, my mother was, 23? Jesus, she was so young.
Was?
Finn asks. We're getting there, I sigh. So I was up in the attic one day looking for old clothes of my grandma's for a school presentation. I was doing a report on Viola Desmond and wanted an old-fashioned dress. I don't know why I thought my grandma would have one of those, I laugh. Because she was young, too, when she died. Only 39. But I was like 7 then, so I had no concept of what old was. And I found a photo album. It was all about my mom. This woman I barely knew because she was 22 years old and wasn't raising me. I saw her every now and again. Sometimes she'd show up on my birthday. She came by the Christmas before. I remember that. Brought me a book called How to Be a Lady, which makes me pause to laugh. Ironic, since she wasn't what I'd call a lady. More on that later. I feel Finn let out a breath. A sigh comes with it. My mother was... I don't know the word for a person like her. I'm not really sure what it's called. Maybe charismatic? But that word, for whatever reason, makes me think of a man. So, not that. Maybe alluring? It was in her eyes, I think. She had very dark hair, like me, and pale skin, like me. But she had these weird brown, not brown eyes. Unlike me, because mine are blue. But it wasn't her looks, it was her personality, her soul.
Charming,
he asks. What?
She was charming, like you.
I shrug. Maybe.
She was captivating?
He tries again. Yes, I say. Yes, captivating.
Like you.
Maybe. Which makes Finn smile. And I stop my story, all thoughts of my story, to enjoy his smile. Because he won't be smiling much longer if I keep going.
Go on,
he says after his smile fades and I stay quiet, still trying to burn that smile into my memory. One day I might need that smile. One day I might have nothing left but that smile. So I like to keep things like that tucked away for future use.
I want to hear the rest.
He really doesn't. What he really means is that he needs to hear the rest. Which I get. So I do. Go on. So, when my mom was 23 and I was 8, she showed up at my grandpa's house with this guy, her new husband.
No,
Finn says, jumping ahead. I nod. That was Caleb Kelly. He was a little older than her, but still very young, like 25, I guess. And there was a lot of yelling and a lot of crying and a lot of threats from both sides. My grandpa, who already had lawyers in place for this, kept his head. I do remember that much. All the drama came from them. He knew this visit would come eventually, and he was well prepared. But she was married now. Her life was in order, and her record was clean. So, what's a judge to do, right?
Fuck,
Finn whispers. It took 3 years of legal battles, but she won. Mostly because my grandpa was really sick by that time. He died shortly after I was sent to live with her in Philadelphia. And then my new life began as the daughter of a mob. Well, what was he back then? I don't know. Not a boss yet, but he was making a name for himself.
Caleb Kelly is
one of you. I finish for him, because that's just the truth. The silence that ensues is painful. I burned that into my brain as well, because one day there might be a time when I'm happy, when I'm satisfied, when I feel safe. And then I'll take this moment out and turn it around in my hand, looking at it from all angles with detached acceptance. And it'll bring reality crashing back into focus. And then he started touching me, pretty much almost immediately. There's this low rumble that fills the room. It takes several full seconds to realize that it's Finn, some deep animalistic growl emerging from his chest. I go on because this story isn't even close to over yet. I started taking kid karate when I was 6. You know those classes, right? 50 small children in a room wearing white gi and white belts, screaming and punching and kicking the air like kids do. Well, I took that seriously. I don't know why, I just did. I had passed the kid's black belt test by the time I went to live with my mom, and even though he'd have never encouraged me to continue if he knew what I'd eventually become, Caleb let me continue. Used to parade me around his gang, I guess, if you want to call them that. It might have been more of a cartel by then, though. Make me fight them. He used them to scare me, and then he used me to scare them. And I just kept going to the dojo, kept getting better, because it got me out of the house. It was all I had back then. The fight was all I had.
So that's how you won that world championship?
Yep, I say. That's how I did it.
Did he rape you?
More times than I can count. Finn's body was stiff before, but now it's rigid, like death. Until I came back from winning that world championship. I was 17 then, and he came at me, drunk. I was riding high, feeling powerful and angry, and so I took him out, kicked his fucking ass, broke all his fingers for touching me,
kicked him in the balls until he was writhing in pain on the floor, unable to even move. And then I called the cops, filed a report, and, well, the rest you can figure out. My mother cried, begged me to. Finn waits, but this is the hardest part for me to say. I can tell him I was raped, no problem. But what came after? That's the part that hurts.
Begged you to what?
I shrug. Stay quiet. What else? She said they'd come after me. After her.
Did they?
Of course they did. They killed her 2 days after he was found guilty and sent to prison.
And you? What did they do to you?
They tried to do things to me, but I smile, because that's a moment I take out often. That memory has gotten me through so many, many hard times. Well, I'm still here.
So, Declan.
I don't know, Finn.
Do you know me?
It would be a strange question coming from anyone else, but it's not coming from him. He is Irish mob. I am too. By default, but still, that connection is there. Murphy, I say, thinking about his last name. No, I don't think so. I was already back in Montreal the day the indictment came down for Kelly in Philadelphia. When my grandpa died, he left me a key to a storage unit back near our old house. I went there to gather up the lost pieces of my life, and then I just disappeared. Because he didn't just leave me money. He left me a new ID, a new name, a new past, a new everything.
So your sealed juvenile file?
It's not me. None of that is real.
What was your old name?
Izette Gary.
Izette,
he says, trying it out.
It fits you.
I know it's stupid to keep my same first initials, and I was fully aware that my new last name is an anagram of my old one, but it's what I had. It's what my grandpa left me. So I took the gift, left Canada, and started over as Izzy. He thinks about this for a while.
You're not surprised that Caleb found you, are you?
I shrug again, then decide to just admit it. Why not? Why not embrace the truth? It gives you power over your fears. So I say, in a way, I think I've been waiting for this day.
And you still want to run?
Well, I huff out something that might be a laugh. I'm not stupid. I know he's going to win, especially now that he's out of prison and he's found me. So running makes sense. Staying, I say, fighting, that's a death wish.
Yeah,
he agrees, hugging me tighter.
I get it. Revenge isn't worth it sometimes.
Besides, I say, I think I already got my revenge.
By sending him to prison?
No, that wasn't me. That was the government. I got my revenge when I became the person I was meant to be. When Izette Gary finally became Izzy Gray. When I wrote my book, it had a story in there, kind of like this one, but not this one. And people responded to it. They saw strength in me, which made me believe in myself, made me take on the role of helper. So I started those courses and began speaking. And that's the best I can do, right? Just be me, the way I was meant to be me. And go on. So I think success is my revenge.
If you leave tomorrow, I want to go with you.
Why? I ask. I mean, we've known each other 1 day, Finn. 1 day.
I don't care, he says. You make all the sense to me, Izzy. It's like all the questions I have about my life
what I'm doing, where I'm headed, why I'm here. They were like a cloud, a mist, something intangible, like an obscure haze that had no definition. And then you come into my life, and suddenly all those stray particles coalesced and became something real.
We both think about that for a little bit. I picture him in my head, standing in something that looks like a cloud, slowly moving around at his feet. And then it begins to move quicker, spin faster, until I appear, an apparition made of water molecules or some other life-giving element, and become his reality. It's a beautiful vision. Even I have to admit that. Like a line of poetry. But there's this little nagging question in the back of my head. This feeling that something is wrong here. Not him. I believe him when he says we have this connection. But what of the mist that wasn't me? All those particles still left behind. What of that? If you leave with me, you'll be on the run too.
I've been on the run since the moment my father handed me that box on graduation day. I just didn't realize it.
Will they come looking for you?
Who is they?
He asks. Them, the Bureau. Them, the mob, whoever. Who'll miss you if you run, Finn? I guess that's the question I'm asking. He thinks about this for a long time. A long time. And then he says,
you know what I hate about stories?
I'm more than a little confused at the topic change, but that's overridden by my own curiosity at where this might be going. Stories as in books?
Or movies,
he says. What, I ask, what do you hate?
The endings.
He pulls me tight against his chest and I take him in. His scent, the curve of his biceps as I trace my finger down the length of his arm, his large hands.
I never get the endings.
What do you mean? You don't like them?
No, I like a good ending as much as anyone, but I don't get them. Because there's no end to a story. Just because you run out of pages doesn't make it the end. So I get to the end of a movie or a book and I think, I feel like I was cheated, you know?
Okay. I've read some good endings, seen a few movies that leave me satisfied when they're over, but I get what you're saying. And I guess the author or movie director just wants people to make that part up.
Right,
he says, playing with my hair, twisting the dark strands around in his fingers, looking at me thoughtfully as he does this.
Just make it up. That's my whole point. We're making all this up, Izzy. Every second of our lives, we're creating our own reality.
What's that got to do with people missing you if you leave?
Those people don't count unless I let them count. So yeah, I guess the Bureau might wonder where the fuck I went. In fact,
he laughs,
I know they will. And I guess the mob will be more than a little interested, if only because they want to know what my future looks like as it pertains to them. But that story is over now. They're at the end, and there's no more pages. There's no more film to see. Because this is my story, not theirs.
It's deep, I say, after giving his answer some consideration. But not what I was looking for, exactly. So I'll rephrase the question. What will those people do if you disappear with me?
Chapter 27. Fen. I know what she's asking, and she knows I'm evading. So it comes down to this. Do I give her what she's looking for and scare her away, or do I let it ride and see how far we get? I'm still trying to decide when she says, you know what Jordan told me? Last night when we were discussing the game? I thought you weren't allowed to talk about it. Well, fuck that NDA. I'll take my chances. Because he knows more about this shit than he's saying. I might not know everything, but I know when someone's feeding me bullshit to evade the topic. What? I ask, smiling down at her, looking into her blue eyes. Soul to soul. Because she knows I'm doing the same thing. What did he tell you? She looks at me, but doesn't smile. He said, some people like a panic game. That's what my friend signed me up for, a panic game. And that could mean a lot of things. Strangulation was one of them. Jesus, I laugh. Do you like that shit? She giggles. I mean, maybe? It was pretty hot when you had your hand around my throat, but that's not the point. It was just one option of the panic game. Okay, so what were the other options? Submission, because I'm a control freak? So he said some women, like me, crave submission. But that's not what we settled on when all was said and done. We settled on chaos. The kind of panic that comes with chaos because I'm so rigid, I guess. So controlling. So orderly. I need everything to go a certain way because that's what keeps me sane. It was just a guess, and he happened to guess right. But it was only a guess until I thought about it more. Jordan Wells might think he knows me, but he doesn't. Me, or at least the real me, was never written down in a file somewhere. They're not locked away in some sealed juvenile record. They're not on any social media, and there's no photo album to find in an attic one day by accident. The most important parts of me, the things that make me me, are all in my head. They're memories. So all the things that make you you? They're up here, then. She taps my head with her finger. They're not what you did. They're not what you're doing. And they're certainly not where you're going, because that hasn't happened yet. They're just a stack of memories and nothing else. I nod, getting it. So forget about what life looks like if you come with me, and tell me what life looks like now. And here it is, the moment of truth. Because she has now spelled it out for me, and I have a choice. I can tell her or not. But if I don't tell her, then she's not going to stick around. That's the part I get. They're going to miss me, I admit. Why, because you're an invaluable FBI agent? I almost snort. Because you know too much about the mob? I shake my head. No, neither of those things. I hate being an FBI agent. I mean, it was the only thing I wanted to be until my father gave me that phone. But every moment after that one was tainted by corruption. So I'm not some integral part of their team. I'm a fucked up partner. I have no good insight into their mission, and I have no promising future with them. Even if things go my way out here in Denver, it's over. It's been over since the day I started. I know she's got lots of questions about that, but she's patient with me and lets it go. And no, I'm not part of the mob either. I have ties, for sure. But they can't trust me. No one trusts me, Izzy. No one until you. And that's probably just me making a lot of assumptions. I'm still looking at her. I search her eyes for some kind of sign of what she's thinking, but find nothing. So why would they miss you? Because I do actually have another reason for coming to Denver. And that's because that's hidden behind a well-written NDA. Ah, she says. And you're not willing to break it, even if it does involve a crime. I can't. Not yet, anyway. But the way things are going, that could change very fast. How? but then she sighs. Never mind. I understand. She says she does, and maybe she thinks she does, but she doesn't understand, and she's not giving me a pass. And this isn't over. She's just being agreeable. I don't want her to be agreeable, so I need to tell her something true, something real, something more. So the endings, right? I say, continuing my train of thought. That next blank page in the book. I know we've just met, and we don't really know each other at all. But I have this feeling about you, Izzy. Like we've known each other for years, lifetimes maybe. And I've never felt that way with anyone else. I've never just bumped into someone by accident and wanted to be with them. Wanted to share things with them. I guess what I'm trying to say is, before you, I've never wanted to keep the story going. I've never wanted to fill up that blank page. And I know that's not enough and makes no sense. But it's what I feel. It's the panic, she says, smiling again. What? You're thinking, why the fuck am I telling this girl this shit? Why am I trying so hard? Why do I care? And it's the panic. The rush of being on the same team with someone for once. And yet here I am, spilling my guts, but at the same time not telling you what you need to know. Why? I shrug. None of that shit is who I am, Izzy. Okay. Then who are you? Just a guy doing his best to make the right decisions. And not repeat the mistakes of my father. Not end up buried in concrete on a construction site. She nods her head at me thoughtfully. Will you ever tell me why you're here? Here? I say, touching her chest. No, she says, sitting up and pointing to the wall of windows. Here. Yeah, I will. When the time is right. You do realize that's the wrong answer, but she's smiling when she says it. Yeah, I say, smiling back. I do realize that. But it's the only one I've got right now. She eases herself back down, resting her head on my chest. Where would we go? I place my hand on her head, enjoying the fact that she accepted that answer as truth. Did you have somewhere in mind? Because I don't care about the place, only the person I go with. I was thinking Kansas. What the fuck is in Kansas? Nothing, she says, sighing. I look down at her just in time to see her eyes close. That's the whole point. There's nothing there but farms and fields and tractors. I'd buy a big old piece of land and just forget about the rest of the world. Live alone. She lifts her head up to see me now. Unless you come. I'd make an exception for you. Would you? Mm-hmm. I would. I'd get a horse and a chicken coop and maybe start a garden, even though I can't grow shit. I'd try anyway. Well, Kansas it is. Maybe we better get the fuck out of this hotel and go pack. I'm not taking anything. Nothing? She shakes her head. There's nothing there for me. I mean, I love the house, but obviously I can't take that with me. The trophy? I ask. The framed magazine cover? The family photos? Wow, she breathes out. What? You were in my house for like 10 minutes and you just picked out the only 3 possessions that mean anything to me. That's some trick you got there, agent. I shrug. I guess that's what I do, right? I'm a fucking FBI agent. For better or worse. Yeah, I say. There's something nagging me, telling me to pay attention, but I don't want to pay attention. because I think that nagging feeling is guilt. Guilt for wasting my 20s being a carbon copy of my father. Guilt for killing him. Guilt for accepting the deal they gave me to stay out of prison. Guilt for being here with her. Because somehow, some way, I'm gonna fuck this up just like I fucked all the rest up. Okay, she says, like she's been thinking about my questions. I guess you're right. I really don't want to leave those things behind. I know the frame is smashed and the picture was just a digital printout, but I'd rather glue and tape it all back together if it means I can keep something that my grandfather held in his own hands when he was alive. And I know I have that family photo on my phone, but that photo was taken the day before my mom showed up with her new husband and upended my world. To me, it was the last day I was ever truly happy. And the trophy? I ask. I just want to keep her talking. I want to listen to her for days, years, lifetimes. I was presented that award the first year I started public speaking. I was brand new to the speaking circuit, but my seminars always sold out. People were talking about me. They wanted to interview me. They wanted my opinion. And I remember thinking, who the fuck would want my opinion on anything? And if they only knew who I really was. She sighs. Well, when I got that award, that very day, I decided that I didn't think they'd care who I was. I really didn't. These people, these strangers, knew the real me. They heard me talk once, maybe twice, and they knew me. And the people in my past never had any idea. I just want to look at this woman. I never want to take my eyes off her. That's how I feel about you, I say. Like I know you, and I realize I don't. But I feel like I do. And sometimes you just gotta go with the feeling. She smiles, pats my arm, then leans up to kiss me. First on the lips, then on the cheek, then on the neck. You know what the silliest thing about that trophy is? I can't imagine anything about that trophy is silly. But I really want to hear her talk some more. So I say, what? It's so stupid. She laughs. It's like 6 inches tall, made of gold-colored plastic, and the base isn't even wood, it's resin. She stops to look up at me and smile. Then she shrugs. But I don't care. It's solid gold to me. It's worth a fortune to me. Because that day I got that, that's the day I thought to myself, well, that settles it. You really are Izzy Gray now. Because that stupid award says so. Maybe you've always been Izzy Gray. Maybe. And then she thinks about this for a few seconds and amends. Yeah. I have. I've always been her. It just took a while to figure that out. Well, I'm envious, I say, because I've always just been me, and I wish I was someone else. She tilts her head up at me and says, well, I think you're pretty perfect just the way you are. And yeah, maybe you've made some mistakes. That's an understatement. But were they honest mistakes? That's what I ask the women in my classes. Like, did you set out to fuck people over? Or was it more about circumstance? Does it matter? I mean, if you kill your father, does it matter that it was the only choice at the time? Well, let me ask you this, Agent Murphy. Suppose you were a woman. Now suppose you were young and naive and a man came into your life and told you everything you wanted to hear. And he made you feel good and special and perfect. Now let's suppose he was lying. She swallows hard, takes in a deep breath. Let's suppose he hurt you. Badly. And let's suppose you did something you didn't want to do, but he was holding a gun on you, and you were holding one on him, and you just happened to shoot True first. Do you think it matters now? Legally? I ask. No, she says, poking me in the chest, the tip of her finger right over the center of my heart. Emotionally. No, it doesn't. But she still did it. Izzy shrugs. I guess my point is, do you live with it and vow to never let yourself get in that kind of situation again? Or do you beat yourself up until you can't take it anymore and give up? I don't know, Izzy. I just know what I did was wrong, and I wish I could take it back. You don't get a rewind. I know that. So you just come to terms with it. You make that incident your own personal catharsis and try to be a better person. I know what she's saying is true. I get that. It all makes perfect logical sense. But my problem is, and this I can't tell her, so she can't help with it. My problem is, I never became that better person. I'm still the same guy. Ready to go again? She says, winking at me, trying to lighten the mood. And I appreciate it, too, more than she knows. I just want to enjoy her right now. Just accept that this good thing came into my life and enjoy her before she figures out I don't deserve her. So I say, so fucking ready. And dive under the covers, scooting my way down her body, my hands reaching up to squeeze her tits. And the moment she opens her legs, I start eating her out. I make her come all over my face. I sit on top of her, pinning her to the bed as I fuck her tits with my cock. And then I ease it into her mouth and watch her suck me off until I can't take it anymore and make her stop. And then I fuck her slow again. I want her to think of me as a slow, careful lover, even when I'm not. We sleep, wake, order room service, fuck, and sleep some more. And pretty soon, the dawn is breaking, and she's groaning about sleeping longer. And I'm thinking, I wish I could keep you in this hotel room forever. I wish I could stop time, so you never learn the lies I'm telling. So you never see me as the man I really am. But I want to pretend a little longer. So we do sleep some more. And we order room service for breakfast so we can stay in the fantasy a little longer. Live the dream to its fullest. The problem with dreams is, you always wake up eventually. So I'm gonna take her to Kansas. Today. We're gonna buy a fucking farm. Some beat-up old house with a falling-down front porch. The roof will leak. The floors will squeak, and the hot water will never really get hot. But we won't care. We're going to raise chickens, and get a horse, and grow a garden. Hell, maybe we'll even grow a family.
Chapter 28. Izzy. I'm checking my email on Finn's phone because the battery is dead on mine, and even though there's a million messages about the seminar yesterday, I don't even pretend to read them. I just hold the phone in my hand, stare down at it, and think. I need to make sense of this, because it makes no sense. I've known this man a day and a half, and I'm rearranging my life for him. Well, no, that's not really true. I'm accepting his offer to navigate this Caleb bullshit alongside me. And the only thing I can come up with that makes any sense at all is that everyone wants to belong. That's my feeling, anyway. That's one of the major takeaways I've gotten out of this whole life coach thing over the past several years. People are unhappy when they don't feel supported, and it's hard to feel supported when you're fighting for your life. That doesn't have to mean literally. Not everyone has had to fight like I did. The fight could be as simple and overwhelming as trying to pay rent or heat your house or feed your kids. And if the sense of belonging isn't there, then hopelessness takes over. There's a big difference between being solitary and being alone. I look over at Finn as we navigate our way back into downtown Denver and use him as an example. He comes from a family where blood means everything, where loyalty is counted in the secrets you keep, and success is earned by doing what you're told, even if that involves putting your life on hold. This has to be the reason he wants to come with me today. He's given them enough, and now he wants to take something for himself. I see women come into my classes and seminars like this all the time. They got married, had kids, devoted years and years to taking care of other people, and now the husband left, maybe cheated, maybe not, maybe she cheated. The kids are older, no longer attached to her every second of the day, or maybe she had no children, maybe she had no husband. They are all different in that respect. But the one thing they have in common is they feel lonely. They feel adrift. They feel lost. But I don't really care why the women come to me. I just want to help them find peace, whatever that means to them. The way I found peace is helping them. It just feels good to do that, and I'm sad that there will be no more masterclasses in my future. The online stuff is nice, for sure. But it won't ever replace the sense of pride I felt walking into that office on the first day, bearing witness to their broken dreams, or the sense of joy it brings me when I watch them grow and change and blossom as the weeks and months go by. And there's no man, no amount of money, no amount of personal success that can replace how I feel about them the day they graduate. Not all of them have their shit together that day. Not all of them have achieved whatever it was they thought they wanted when they started the class, and not all of them have found their peace. But all of them are on their way, and I helped them do that, with words. It amazes me every time I think about it, that something so simple, something free, something we all have access to, put together in the right order and said with conviction, can change lives. I'm not the world's most tragic girl by any stretch of the imagination, but I've paid my dues. So maybe today is my graduation day. Maybe I put in the time, did all the homework, and now it's time for me to move on too. Maybe I've been using them to fix me instead of the other way around.
What are you thinking about?
Finn asks as we sit at a red light on Champa Street. Everything, I say, looking over at him to smile. Do you think this is, like, meant to be or something?
What is?
He asks.
Us?
I nod. Yeah. Because, well, we met the day before yesterday, Finn. That's kinda crazy, right? He exhales, but it's kind of a laugh.
Totally,
he says, easing the car forward when the light turns green.
But you know what?
What? I ask. He looks at me for a moment, then takes his eyes back to the road and the morning traffic.
I've been in a cage for so long, I barely know what it means to be free. And this, what we're doing today, feels a whole lot like freedom to me.
What if we hate each other tomorrow?
Do you think we will?
He asks, and it's not a joke. It's not mean, either. In fact, it feels like the most honest question I've ever been asked. So I say, no, I don't.
Me either.
I think I see some frustration in the future. I see some challenges. Like, what if you snore like a fucking bear? He laughs. You didn't last night, but that doesn't really count. I wouldn't call anything we did last night typical.
Maybe it is. Maybe that's our new normal. Fucking and laughing and talking and room service. Maybe that's the rest of our lives. Maybe I never sleep deep enough again for you to find out the answer to the do you snore question.
What if we get caught? I ask.
Who's gonna catch us?
The Bureau? Caleb?
And then what?
I don't know. Maybe they kill us, I say.
What if we stay and toe the line? What will they do to us then?
Same, I suppose. Eventually.
Do you want to stay and fight?
He looks right at me when he asks that question. I shake my head. No, that for sure leads to death.
Are you having second thoughts? Because if so, I get it. You barely know me, and—
I'm not, I say quickly. I'm not.
Then what's this about?
It feels a little like quitting to leave all those women behind. I mean, I know the online course is good. I've been building it for a while now, preparing for this day. I have a shell company to keep it anonymous. I have the website already. I have, like, almost 100 videos for them to watch, and it's all free, so...
Are you worried about money?
No, I say, frustrated that when I need the right words, I can't find them. I'm a goddamned award-winning speaker who gets paid to find the right words, and now they're failing me. I actually made a ton of money off the book, so I have that in savings overseas. And that last masterclass got me into a solid 6 figures for this year already, and it's only February. So it's not the money.
Then,
I just feel kinda like a quitter.
Well, we can always tell the world what kind of man Caleb Kelly really is. You have a lot of information, Izzy, and so do I. We could bring him down. Maybe alone it would have been a tough sell, but together?
But you're one of them, Finn. How could the world trust you? Caleb and his people will drag your name through the mud, turn you into a joke. And the FBI won't help, not when they find out why you really joined.
I think they'll come around once they find out what we know.
Will they? I ask. Knowledge is a strange thing. You can know something, something wonderful, something meaningful, something true. And even then, oftentimes it changes nothing. You could know the secrets of the universe, but what do you do with that knowledge? And what good is knowledge anyway? What good is truth that isn't accepted? What good is a secret you can do nothing with?
Well, that's just it, isn't it? We can do something with our secrets.
I don't think so, Finn. I think the world already knows our secrets. Someplace deep down, they know these things already. Maybe not the specifics, but they know bad people are out there. They know there's corruption. They know all this. And they don't want to think about it. They don't have time to care. Because caring means they have to reevaluate their priorities, their worldview. Caring means they have to change. He looks over at me as he turns into the alley behind my work, pulling up next to my car. The only car in the parking lot since Suzanne won't be back, and no one is coming in for a consultation today. We get out of his car, get into mine. He drives, and pull back out into the street to head over to my place.
Are we talking about them, or you, Izzy?
Some people might take that as an accusation. Some people might be offended. Some people might even get angry. But it's an honest question. Those were the words I was looking for and couldn't find. Why am I doing this?
Leaving? He asks.
No. Why did I start this business in the first place?
Oh,
he says, surprised at the change of subject. But was it really a change of subject? Haven't I been talking about this the entire time?
To help people, of course. I mean, you can't be doing it for the money. Otherwise, you'd be charging for that online course.
I'm not doing it for the money, I say.
I know. So why don't you tell me why you're doing it? Because you're the only one who knows.
I'm doing it because I care about them, I say. I want them to feel cared for when they're with me. I want them to feel that because I never did. He leans across the center console, places a hand on my cheek, kisses me on the lips, and whispers,
"Yeah, it's official."
Which makes me laugh. What are you talking about?
I love you.
Oh, Lord, I say, still laughing. You've known me one day.
We're working on day two, lady. Don't shortchange me on the morning after.
You're crazy, I say.
Maybe. Maybe not. Maybe all the panic we've been through just made us unusually close. Maybe telling secrets gave us a bond you can't get any other way. Or maybe,
he says, soft smile creeping up his face.
I'm just the kind of guy who knows a good thing when he finds it.
I feel tears welling in my eyes, which isn't me at all. I mean, I didn't even cry last night when I told him I was raped repeatedly as a child by a mobster who is now most certainly after me, who probably wants to kill me, or worse, rape me again. Anger, hate, rage, violence, none of that stuff phases me anymore. But tenderness? Yeah, that gets me every time. I'm just not used to it.
Hey,
Finn says,
get used to it.
It's like he can read my mind. How could he know me so well? Why do I feel like we're meant to be together? I'm not one of those girls who waits around for Prince Charming. And he's not even Prince Charming. He's fucking King Death or something. He admitted to killing his own father, and I dismissed it. I validated him for doing that.
I like you, he says. Maybe love is too strong a word for day two, but I'm in, you know? Whatever it is you want to do, I'm in. If you want to run, we'll run. If you want to fight, we'll fight. If you want to go public, we'll do that. Hell, we can do all three if you want. I don't care. I feel like with you, I can do anything, Izzy. You empower me. So just tell me, and we'll do it together.
I place my hand over his. I want all three.
Done.
It's not done, you weirdo. Doing all three is impossible.
Says the woman who already did the impossible.
What are you talking about?
You survived, Izzy. And from what you've told me, that was an all-of-the-above kind of strategy. So let's do it. Let's leave today, make a plan, get that asshole Caleb and Declan and anyone else who's dirty as sin, and take it all public. Put it all out there for the world to judge. I've got tricks up my sleeve. Don't worry about my reputation. What you see is not what you get.
I don't know if I believe that.
Which part? The tricks part or the surviving part?
They're gonna get you, I say, and I can't let them.
If that's code for I'm gonna leave him so I don't ruin his life, then forget it, babe. You're stuck with me.
But
just trust me, he says. I know that's a hard thing for you, but trust me. I got this.
I decide to accept his offer because I'm tired. I'm tired of making all these decisions on my own. I'm worn out from being the strong one. I'm fucking exhausted from maintaining control. I just want someone on my side. I just want a partner. And I want to believe that the pleasure of living comes from the panic you endure when you change your life from one thing into another. And it hits me, then, just as these words go from being an ethereal mist around my feet to something concrete in front of me. This is exactly what Zig meant when he said, "You must make a choice to take a chance or your life will never change." And that feels so right all of a sudden, so on track, so inevitable, so certain and necessary and fated that I believe